I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the FPL Roundtable, the only fantasy Premier League podcast where we guarantee that you might learn something about fantasy, probably. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. Joining me, as always, is my good friend and partner in crime, Rob Langevin. Rob, it's been a little bit of a slower week in FPL. Obviously, the launch wasn't this week. There's been less high-profile moves, like we had Lukaku last week. That whole Rooney rotation that the two of them did. Anything new that you've been keeping your eye on this week?
No, I mean, the transfer market's been pretty slow. I think the Kyle Walker new transfer is the biggest one that has happened, which is, just rattling down ramifications throughout the FPL universe, whether it be draft style or the official game. It's interesting that City are bringing in people hand over fist, and, especially in a draft style with the rumors that are going out there, all this, I'm not going to say that Alexis is going to end up at City, but, if he does end up at City, it's pretty weird that, Manchester City could have four draft picks in the first round of players, which would be completely just bonkers.
Who's the fourth, Sané or Walker?
Well, you'd have De Bruyne, Aguero, Jesus. Yeah. And then, Alexis.
Sané or Silva. Alexis. Right.
Yeah. So it's weird to speculate that, if it's the abundance of fantasy talent that they would have. But that's draft style. So we're here to talk about official game. It's everybody's trying to bang out, drafts of another draft of teams, trying to figure out the best, 1+1=100 million team. So, but we'll get into that a little bit later. We're going to talk about template teams, percentage of ownership right now that are, the trends that are going around the FPL universe. But we'll just stick right here and we'll talk about transfer news, Kev. With the news that Kyle Walker is now at City, what are the ramifications that have come down through that? Do you still think he's a better player at City than at Tottenham, or would you rather own his replacement at Tottenham over Kyle Walker and Kieran Trippier?
I'd definitely rather own Trippier, but I don't think that those are mutually exclusive concepts. I think you could definitely own both. A little bit of fun stat where Kyle Walker last year tied with the most assists last season with 5. He had one every 541 minutes. Kieran Trippier, one every 113 minutes. City defenders on average, one every 1,784 minutes.
That's a
long, long time. City defenders as a whole had 7 assists last year. Walker had 5 all by himself. So this is obviously a step up, both in fantasy, because you finally have an outlet on that right side that we haven't seen since Zabaleta got old, and also improves them in real life, because a mixture of Zabaleta and it was Fernandinho towards the end of the year playing quote-unquote right back for them. Like, the fact that this is now going to be an ever-present is definitely good. Does it make Kyle Walker a better player? I don't think so. I don't think removing somebody from getting to play next to Toby Alderweireld makes anybody better. If Kompany stays fit, that is obviously mitigated tremendously. But if he's next to John Stones or Otamendi, that could cause issues. But the fact that he's going to definitely be playing, I mean, there is no one else that's going to challenge him for that spot. So in that regard, I think Walker is still, top 5, top 10 probably. That 6.5 price tag in a City defense versus in a Tottenham defense feels harsh. Like, a 6.0 probably is more belying of his abilities day one. But, people can nitpick over 0.5 all preseason. And, if you want him in your team, have him in your team. He's obviously the best defensive threat that Manchester City have at the moment, and like I said, probably the best that they've had since Zabaleta got too old to really contribute anymore.
Yeah. Now here's an interesting question. His price is 6.5, like you mentioned. Is there anybody in that 6.5 price range that you'd want more than Kyle Walker right now? Just at 6.5, I'm saying.
Yeah. Let's take a look. See.
You got Azpilicueta, Cahill, Moses, Coleman, Milner, Valencia, and Rose, and Walker, obviously.
Yeah. If Rose was healthy, I'd probably lean that way. Valencia's playing time issues at the end of the season were just as concerning as Walker's. Mm-hmm. The Chelsea guys, I understand. The Azpilicueta thing, because he ended up with a fair few assists, because he got like 3 in the last 6 or so matches. I don't know whether to believe that or not. It seems like all of the Alexandro stuff has died down, so it feels like you can finally trust an Alonso, and I know you're very pro-defense at the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I probably wouldn't do it on Cahill. But, I probably still do have Walker in my top 5 then.
Okay, yeah, I'd probably, the only player above 6.5 or more than Kyle Walker, the only person I would want to own is Alonso. That's the only person I would own over Walker out of that grouping.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Although, like we both said, at a cheaper price by a whole dollar, Trippier at 5.5 is...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 5.5 Trippier is probably going to be one of the most owned defenders once the season kicks off, you know, because of what he's going to bring, what Spurs can do, and how defensively they are prone for clean sheets. At 5.5, he's basically a great entry level. I know 5.5, you're sitting at home going, that's not entry level, but for a Spurs defense, that's entry level, because you had Walker at 6.5, you had Rose at 6.5, you have Vertonghen and Toby at 6.0.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at 5.5, you're getting a entry level for a top one or two defensive team by the when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
I mean, this seems just like a too good to be true scenario at 5.5.
It does. And concerningly, as a Spurs fan, it's starting to look more and more like we may be willing to come into the year with Trippier as our one, Dier as cover behind him, and then Kyle Walker-Peters, who's a youth prospect behind him. All the rumors of the Ricardo Pereira stuff and the Cedric stuff have all kind of died down. Mm-hmm. There's still every possibility we make a move like that. But the point of selling Kyle Walker on is that Pochettino believes that Kieran Trippier is ready to be in the first team. So even if we do target someone else, the goal will be for Trippier to be starting in the first team, at least for the start of the year. So regardless, he's a terrific option, but it may be even better than we think if Tottenham end up ignoring that position for the rest of the transfer window.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they just completely left it alone. And you know, with the shape of Spurs' first 8 fixtures, Newcastle, at Chelsea, at Burnley, home to on the road to Everton, home to Swansea, on the road to West Ham, on the road to Huddersfield, then home for Bournemouth. First 8 fixtures is looking very good. 6 out of the 8 matchups are in their favor. You know, they're on a new pitch. I understand the argument for the new pitch and all that stuff with playing at Wembley this year. The field is bigger, but just by stats alone from last year, that carryover is going to be a predominantly good thing for FPL ownership. And I'm firmly buying into at least one or maybe 2 Spurs defenders for the first 8 weeks. It's all a firm investment there, because like I said, at the end of the day, when you're done painting the room and the paint's drying, it's, you know, that the Spurs defenders are not going to leave any streaks.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to see what can happen with Trippier there. The other one to keep an eye on here for people playing at home is Kevin Vimmer. It sounds like we may actually allow him to leave on loan inside the Premier League, with Southampton eyeing him as a potential replacement for Van Dijk if he left. And all of a sudden, Vimmer, regardless of where he goes, at 4.5 would be a very, very tempting option as well. To stop talking about my club, shift to yours. Chelsea have signed Bakayoko. He's been priced at 5.0 as an incoming. Only 2 goals and 1 assist in 32 matches last season. He's a midfielder, which, even though he's defensively minded, ruins all of those clean sheets for him. 2 questions, 1 real life, 1 fantasy. 1, what's the point of developing Chiloba all these years, then selling him to bring in a similar player? And 2, I know you've always leaned Fabregas over Willian on who would take advantage mostly of Hazard's absence, but does them bring in another central midfielder hurt his fantasy stock for you?
First off, I think Chelsea wanted a tried and true guy who's tested in the Champions League field, and Bakayoko fits that. That's why I think they went over him over Chalobah, who you know was permanently, you know, was sold. Going on to the Fabregas versus Willian thing, I think both still have a place until Hazard comes back, and then it's going to be a matter of how they, you know, how their form is in their first, you know, six whatever games Hazard misses. You know, we saw them both play and perform very well in the preseason game that we just saw. Willian, I believe, had a hat trick. You know, Fabregas played well as well. Yeah, I mean, at 7.0 for both players, Fabregas and Willian, you know, speculatively, it's a great idea to roster one of them. To have both, you're basically going to have to flip a coin right now and go, you know, which way your booty is pointing. You know, I'm favoring Willian now because I think Fabregas is more confined to that central role, whereas Willian can play out wide and spell Pedro if he needs to. You know, he could play out and on the offset striker role if he needs to. He's more of a scorer than Fabregas is the facilitator. Bakayoko is, you know, I think he slots right in, right next to Conte. So I think that he's safe there. So everybody pushes up then. You know, it's a good thing for Chelsea to have these names in real football. In fantasy, it kind of puts a pinch on who you're rostering and where you're rostering these players. It's a weird conundrum here because when you look at the way Chelsea's constructed right now for fantasy, there's nobody that you're really 100% nailed on with right now. With Hazard injured at 10.5, he's not in your roster to begin the year. You know, you're not really trusting one of their forwards. Costa is basically in the wind. Batshuayi is 8.5. There's probably equal or better investments there because we don't know if Batshuayi is going to be the guy. So basically, it shifts all of your attention for Chelsea ownership. I know that's not what you ask yet, but I'm going into it because we're talking about Chelsea here.
Yeah.
It shifts all the attention right now to basically Chelsea defense. Basically, there's only one guy or two guys that maybe you'll own. And when we get a little later in the show, we'll talk about the template teams. And it's surprising that when I tell you who the most owned Chelsea defender is right now. But, I mean, Alonso to me is the guy at 7.0. His point return was, you know, seventh overall for midfielders. I believe he was sixth overall for if he was a forward. It's his point total. If you compare him to a 7.0 midfielder, he had 48 more points than a midfielder. He had 23 more points than a 7.0 striker last year. I mean, the price tag looks absorbent because he's a defender, but the point return won't be. So when you're looking at Chelsea ownership for the beginning of the year, it's going to be interesting how many people squeeze in different names besides Alonso. And it'd be interesting. And when we get to the Temple team, I'm going to pull out a name, and it's going to surprise everybody that he's the most owned right now. I mean, he is one of the cheaper defenders on their team, but it's just weird that he's the one guy that people are going to.
Yeah, and I look forward to us getting to you talking us through that template team. In the interim, before we get there, still lots of player news. No club more involved this week than West Ham at the moment. They officially bring in Joe Hart today. To play the back, we'll start with him. West Ham 15th in defense last season, but you would assume that they will offer a lot of save opportunities, I suppose, is the positive way to spin this. Where do you have Hart in your non-existent, because none of us do goalkeeper rankings?
You know, he's not near the top and he's not near the bottom. I'd probably put him with the incoming three promoted teams, maybe right in that neck of the neck.
So you don't want him because he's probably going to come at like 5-0.
I would imagine he probably comes exactly right at 5-0.
Oh, yeah, and that's important. The reason we're saying that is because he was not listed under City in the official game yet, so we do not actually know his price at time of speaking.
I mean, with Randolph at 4-5 and Adrian at 4-5 on West Ham, there's a possibility he could come in at 4-5, but I think his name and what he's done previously, you know, winning, I think he's won two Golden Gloves, right, in the Premier League. So that could push him into the 5.0 range. But there's nobody really on West Ham defensively that's sticking out to you. You know, Creswell had a down year. Zabaleta, who can we trust at 5.0? You know, Jose Font at 5.0 is blah. I mean, West Ham's going to give him enough defensively metrics to basically allow him to do some things save-wise, and that's it. I don't see West Ham getting, you know, being in the top 10 for clean sheets. I think they're probably right in that 10 to 14 range where they probably get in that kind of grouping. So it depends on his price tag, but if it's at 5.0, he's definitely not an owned But at 4.5, maybe you could squeeze him into your team. But there's so many better options at 4.5. You have Hennessy, you have Foster, you know, guys like that who have interesting schedules to begin the year. So you could probably bank on them instead of going with a proven or, you know, quote unquote proven commodity like Joe Hart.
Yeah, there's a potential addition to that defense with Jim White saying that Kieran Gibbs could be close to a deal to West Ham, which would be interesting because he plays the same position as Aaron Cresswell. And instead of that seeming a positive, I think, to your point, it shows how strugglesville Cresswell was last year. And I'm not necessarily sure that Gibbs would be too good of a replacement. Yeah. You already mentioned Zabaleta's struggles. Up front, according to Sky as we speak, Arnautovic is just about a deal done as well for around £20 million. That doesn't really matter to you. What does matter to you is a 7.0 price tag and the fact that West Ham, playing in similar positions, have Mikel Antonio, Andre Ayew, Manuel Lanzini, Robert Snodgrass, and Sofyan Fagouli. Mm-hmm. So it feels to me like this removes Arnautovic from fantasy relevance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless he starts up front.
Yeah, he may. I mean, you know, Andy Carroll and Sacco, they can't stay healthy, and Ashley Fletcher's 100 years away. He's not even close to contributing. I mean, it's interesting that I don't think they'll play him as that, you know, that nine or false nine or whatever they're thinking. You know, Andy Carroll is not the, you know, the fitness guru that he can stay healthy. His top knot gets injured when he tightens it too much. So it's you can't trust Andy Carroll for much. And, you know, behind him is Diafore Sakho. So, I mean, that's not really offering much. I could see them playing him as a false nine, but I don't see it. And then we're gonna have to wait till it gets closer to the preseason, or when they actually put their, you know, their actual starting 11 on the field, where he fits in between Antonio, Ayew, Lanzini, you know, Snodgrass, Fagouli. You know, it's funny. It's making Mark Noble look awfully fantastic at 5.5, considering he does take the PKs there.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to me that last year they wanted to bring in a goal-scoring winger that could supplement as a forward up front, and they bought Ayew, mm-hmm. and now they're just doing it again. it's kind of deja vu all over again.
I mean, they could play Andre Ayew up top by himself.
They could, and then play Arnautovic and Antonio on the wings with Lanzini up the middle. I think that makes the most sense.
Right now, on paper, that's their best. I think that's their best front four.
I would agree with you, but that requires West Ham doing what makes the most sense with the talent available to them, which
they won't.
Yeah, definitely question marks there. The last move of the week, Cuco Martina moves from Southampton to Everton at 4.5. He's a right back, seemingly there to replace Mason Holgate, fantasy darling of last season, you know, until Coleman got hurt, which is when he started getting minutes, but then they stopped keeping clean sheets because what's that thing? Seamus Coleman's good. Mason Holgate, while a young, talented center back prospect, not so good at right back. So Martina comes in at 4.5, which is interesting because we spoke last week about how all of the 4.5 guys, those like you can rely on 4.5 guys, are now 5.0. So mm-hmm. the fact he undercuts them, do you have any interest here, or are you too terrified by Everton's early schedule?
I mean, from the interest point that what I saw people owning Mason Holgate at, they were kind of confident that, you know, Holgate would be doing something at 4.5. Are you that much more comfortable with Cuco Martina at 4.5? I don't see it. What I saw from Mason Holgate in what was that tournament? The under 20 or under 21s? Where
it was definitely one of those. England was in so many U tournaments this year. I think it was
the 20s, 21s. Yeah, he did not look good there. But the one good thing is for Everton is they do have a solid set of defenders that are probably better than Cuco Martina. Mm. You got Baines at 6.0, you got Williams at 5.5, you got Michael Keane at 5.5. You still have Phil Jagielka lurking around at 5.0. Funes Mori is hurt or lying in the weeds. He's 5.0. You know, and you still have Mason Holgate at 4.5. And then you got my favorite, Jonjo Kenny at 4.5. I mean, how could you go wrong? This defense is the best. Just end the season now. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I don't expect.
You just think there are too many defensive options?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at an Everton team for a defender, of course Baines is going to jump out at you because he's the most obvious choice because of what he's done previously in the Premier League and what he's, you know, exhibited to be good, you know. And I don't really want to own an Everton defender anyway. Kev, here's their first five games: home to Stoke, at City, at Chelsea, home to Tottenham. Mm-hmm. at United.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, that's not good at all.
So you're basically saying that gives you the opportunity to suss it out?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You're going to wait and watch these prices from Baines and Keane and Jagielka and probably Martina. Their ownership, they're probably going to be owned probably the first week or two, and it's just going to precipitously drop. I'd be a buyer at every one of them at two cents cheaper than where they are right now.
Yep, makes sense.
Once they get past that week five game week for United, they have Bournemouth, Borough, and Brighton.
But what? They can't have Borough because they're
Bournemouth
Championship. Oh, gotcha.
They have Bournemouth, Burnley, and Brighton. Too many B's.
It's a lot of alliteration.
So, I mean, after week five is when I'm looking at, you know, Everton defenders. And at that point, you know, we may have a better timetable for Seamus Coleman as well. So, you know, because that's basically almost Halloween, you know?
Yeah. Also, side note, while we're talking about player moves, as we're recording, Wenger quoted saying that a decision has been made to not sell Alexis Sanchez, which will be interesting to see how that shapes up, considering we were just speaking about him earlier, potentially, in that Manchester City lineup. Rob, speaking of lineups, you said you had a kind of early template team based on the percentages of players that are already owned. Who in there is of particular interest?
Yeah, I just looked at the percentages of owned, who's picking who, who's going where. Let me click on the right thing here. So this isn't really a metric that you can judge anything by. It just goes by what people are looking at and who they're choosing. There's some strange choices there. The number one choice in goal at 5.5 is David De Gea at 26%. That's not absorbent because me and Kevin both think by the end of the season, United may have the most clean sheets. At 5.5, that's kind of a premium that you're going to pay for goalies. I kind of like to play the first 6 weeks with a you know, favorable schedule. You know, I try to at a discount. Obviously, I look at like the Fosters, the Hennessy's, even Heaton has an okay schedule for the first five. But, so at 5.5, De Gea owned 26%. I don't see it. I think people are just buying into a big name. And at the end of the day, sure, David De Gea is going to probably be in the top three for goalie scoring, but not the start of the season. I don't want him. Moving on to defense, these are just the five most owned players. I have Charlie Daniels at 5.0, owned in 19.5. I'm skipping over the most owned defender because I kind of teased it before, and I want to get back into that again. Rangel is owned in 18.7.
Angle.
At 4.0, he's the $4 chuck right now for Swansea. $4 chucks are good because he's basically your fifth defender, and in most lineups you probably don't ever need him, which is a good thing. So if you want Rangel at 4.0 and you're one of the 18% that own him already, you're doing a good job. Kyle Walker at 6.5, owned in 18% of leagues. And then Lindelof, owned in 17.2% of leagues at 5.5. And the most expensive or most owned defender from Chelsea and the most owned defender in the FPL right now at 20%, David Luiz.
What?
Surprisingly. Surprise, surprise. But when you look at the signings they made, I think Luiz, once we get to kickoff time on August 11th, Luiz is going to be there for most of the Premier League games and then probably shift out for the early stages of the Champions League tournament and other tournaments like that with Rudiger. I think that Rudiger slots right into Luiz's spot. That's just my
Wait, to start the year?
No. Luiz is going to be on the pitch for the FPL games. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
But I'm saying when they start playing lesser tournaments and stuff like that, I think Luiz sits and then Rudiger comes in. So yeah, I think Luiz, in everyone's eyes, at 6.0, he's cheaper than every other defender, Cahill, Azpilicueta, Alonso, and Moses by 0.5, and in Alonso's case, one whole dollar. So I think they're looking for David Luiz is the basic cheapest entry into a Chelsea defender. I'm not counting Kurt Zouma at 5.5 because he's going to be somewhere else, but Kurt Zouma, if he was cheaper, would be one of the better defensive ownerships right now. I'm liking what people are thinking with the David Luiz thing. I just think by kickoff, I don't think he'll be the number one guy. But I think it's just interesting now that people are buying into him as the most owned Chelsea defender. So moving on to midfield, Kev, We have Dele Alli, Philippe Coutinho, Wilfred Zaha, Paul Pogba, Alexis Sanchez. It's pretty much chalk right there. And then after Sanchez, in sixth place is Kevin De Bruyne. Dele Alli is owned in 38.4% of leagues at 9.5. I am in love with Dele Alli at 9.5 this year. I think that basically he's going to give you the investment value that you want. I know it's funny. Last year, comparably, Riyad Mahrez started at the same price, 9.5 last year, and he was basically shunned upon because he was too expensive because people didn't think he would do it again. Mm-hmm. That is not the case here. I think Dele Alli is going to do it again. Coutinho, I'm not buying any Liverpool midfielders. You'll see my post on Razzball.com tomorrow. I don't buy any Liverpool players right now. Wilfred Zaha is 7.0. I believe in Crystal Palace. I think they're going to do some good things. Not fantastic things, but it's 7.0. He won't burn you. Pogba, same thing. I think he's going to be an improvement over last year at 8.0, owned in 19.8% of leagues. Is a good investment. I think he's getting by on name value right now. Once people realize that he's not really an official game fantasy asset, he'll probably be sold a lot. He'll probably go down before he goes up unless he scores the first week, obviously. And then Alexis Sanchez, 12.0, owned in 17.5. Obviously the best midfielder in this or any other format, should be owned, rightly so. The transfer rumors are probably squashed now, so his ownership will probably spike and people will try to probably get the most investment of his ownership. Moving on to forwards. Forwards are pretty much chalk. It's Lukaku, Kane, and Lacazette. Most owned. Lukaku is the most owned player in the official game right now at 45.1%. Me and Kevin said that, like, I believe 2 weeks ago, week ago, that Lukaku will probably be the most owned player only because of the, you know, his price.
Big name, big team. Club, recent move.
Exactly. And I think people are a little shy because they like to read the, you know, the articles abound on the, you know, the universe of the internet that Harry Kane hasn't scored in August in ever since. I think he scored when he was 6 years old, but that doesn't count. But, you know, people are shying away from his price tag at 12.5. But not that many people are shying away because he's still owned in 35% of leagues. So I guess only, you know, certain amount of people are believing the non-August.
Well, I think a lot of people are thinking about the end of the year instead of the beginning of the year.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And then Lacazette at 10.5, owned in 26.9, rounds out the top three owned players. It's interesting because I was looking, because if you add up all the totals for the players that is listed, you can't really have all those in one team. I think you're at 111 million. So basically, people are either buying high and getting a third, or, you know, doing whatever. But Dwight Gayle is owned in 12% of leagues, and in the midfield ranks, these two stood out to me. Ruben Loftus-Cheek at 4.5 is owned in 16.2% of leagues, and N'Golo Kanté.
He just caught some bad news today, by the way. Not injury or anything, but Jason Puncheon being named club captain is only damaging to Ruben Loftus-Cheek because that seemed to be the position that he would be most likely able to take over.
100%. But at 4.5, he's basically the punch there. And his teammate, James McArthur, is owned very well at 4.5 as well through the midfield. N'Golo Kanté at 5.0 is owned in 13.6% of leagues, which is interesting because you know he's going to play. He's probably going to play a ton of minutes. At 5.0, you're getting an invested midfielder. He's not going to do much for you offensively. He's probably going to do zero, unfortunately. But he is good for bonus points. And at his price tag, 5.0, he's your fifth midfielder. But the one good thing is you have a fifth midfielder that's going to play. So if you want that in your favor, I can see what people are trying to do. So there's any names there, Kev, that jump out to you as being weird or overly owned? Since it is the preseason, I know we fall into the hype of guys, and we read one article and click and change our team.
I was very surprised by the Luis thing. The midfield largely makes sense. Not really surprised there. Agree with you on the Kane thing. In my most recent draft, I've dropped Kane and brought Alexis back in. But, you know, it's going to be interesting with both of them to see what happens come the start of the year, if Kane can actually get off the ground firing and if Alexis is still at Arsenal or not, if he's at City, then we do have more minute concerns. Whether or not he'd actually be rotated would remain to be seen. I think a lot of that makes sense. I agree with some of your Palace stuff. We've already talked about this on a lot of our shows. I'm fairly pro Palace this year. I am disappointed in the Puncheon thing. I realize that he does more than the official game awards him for, but in real life as well, I think that that is Palace's greatest weakness at the moment, you know, aside from not actually having a goalkeeper. But, yeah, no, I think a lot of that makes sense. And if people want to run counter to things, like Lukaku, he just scored his first friendly goal for Manchester United yesterday. But if you want to kind of wait and see how that turns out, he does have a good run of fixtures to start the year. But we still don't know how that attack is going to fully work out. I just think there's a lot of players. Well, obviously, only 11 players are in that most owned, which really gives you an opportunity to, even from the start of the season, go a little bit more off kilter a little bit to get a little bit of an advantage to start the year.
I agree.
Oh.
Circle gets a square.
That's it. Terrific. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back and do a little bit of either or, and then get into the teams that have the best and worst schedules to start the year. Stay tuned. And we are...
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Back, Rob, we're going to stick with you. In a segment that was your idea last year, and we both did it at times, but it was very enjoyable. We're going to do a little bit of either or here to continue our preseason coverage of the 2017-18 official Premier League game. So, Rob, who are we looking at to start off with?
I'm just looking at guys that are kind of, you know, lying in the weeds, you know, for... I've used that term a lot today. I apologize. I got to get a new phrase.
You mean lying in the TV show Weeds?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So I'm looking at guys that are... Not the. I don't think they're the focal point of teams. Well, one guy is, but you know, whatever. We'll get into it. They're not the focal point of fantasy right now, but I think they could be by the time that fantasy, you know, starts ramping up towards the beginning of the season. So we got Lindelof or Cedric in defense, Kev.
To start the year, I'm definitely going to go with Cedric. The matchups are definitely much better, and we don't yet know if Lindelof is definitely going to be the paired starter with, we assume, Eric Bailly. So yeah, to start the season, I'm definitely going Cedric. But long term, as we've said before, United probably going to have the strong. So if Lindelof does become, you know, a 30 plus start player for them, he would definitely have more value going forward.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I still would favor Eric Bailly over him. That's just me. Okay,
but Bailly is at six, right?
Yeah, sixth. Yeah. We're keeping it defense. Two guys that have new clubs this year and aren't the focal point of their defense. You know, they're not the most owned. They're not the most popular guy. But Michael Keane or Harry Maguire?
Ooh. I like Michael Keane infinitely more as a player, but I think Maguire has the clear shot to playing time. I just don't like how many center backs are floating around at Everton right now, including if they did start playing Holgate as a center back again instead of deploying him at right back, where, again, he's just not very good. As you mentioned earlier, they still have Williams. They still have Jagielka. They still have Funes Mori on the books. So there's a lot of people in the way there, whereas at Leicester, everybody kind of had this feeling that Huth and Morgan were on the way down, and I think Maguire, within the first 5 weeks, will be starting for them. But I'd probably wait on both for now. I don't think I'd be including either of them. Especially, remember, as we mentioned before with Everton, their start to the season is horrendous. Mm-hmm. Leicester's not particularly great either, though, which we'll get to in a little bit. But, yeah, I'd avoid both for now. I like Keane more as a player, but I think Maguire probably ends the season with more minutes played.
Yep, I completely agree. I think both are... intermediate buys that if you're in the mood to, you know, roster one right now until we hear more news. You know, this is all preemptive because, you know, the season's still 3 weeks away and we still really don't know who fits in where and what fits what. But I kind of like Maguire intrigue more, only because he's half a buck cheaper right now, and I think Leicester will find a place for him, whereas I think Keane is going to be squeezed. So I kind of agree with you, Kev. All right, moving on. Willian or Fabregas. You knew it was coming.
Every freaking week. I'm always Team Willian, and I think the Bakayoko thing hurts Fabregas infinitely more.
Okay. I'm a neither, but because I want to see what happens first.
Well, I think the lack of Hazard puts Pedro on the left, which means there's a space on the right, and Fabregas isn't going to play there.
Nope.
I think Willian is the, for now, de facto choice.
Yeah. I completely agree. I think that is what is probably we're going to see most for the up until the buildup of the season. And then the last one, I'll do a forward. Dwight Gayle or Troy Deeney, both at 6.5.
The obvious answer should be Troy Deeney, but it's not. I had Gayle to start the season in my lineup, as you know, because we talked about it last week. I've now taken him out. The fact that he opens up against Tottenham is concerning. The concern about them bringing in somebody ahead of him has been significantly lessened because all the names that were linked, they keep missing out on. And Newcastle fans don't seem particularly confident that Gayle will be able to do the job, which has put me off him just a little bit. It's not sexy, but probably Troy Deeney.
Okay. I mean, I get the hype that Dwight Gayle's coming with, but I would rather go with Troy Deeney. I like that he's a more of a recently proven fantasy Premier League, striker.
Yeah, me too. And it's so easy to buy the Gayle hype because a promoted striker is doing well of late, but I don't know. But he was obviously uninspiring for Palace last time he was here, but he was also a winger. I don't know. Deeney is definitely more stable. Gayle has higher upside for sure, but whether or not he gets there or not, I think is the issue.
Who is stepping into the forward role at Watford and doing anything? It's not Stefano Wakaka. I mean,
for 2 weeks, but not.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. Like, there's nobody and, there. And he's still the captain, and he still takes the penalty kick.
And despite all of the doom and gloom surrounding Roberto Pereira, he did travel with them for their preseason. So as of now, it looks like he's going to be involved, and he is a profoundly good distributor of the ball that we were unfortunately robbed of seeing for about three quarters of last season due to injury.
Yeah, profoundly.
Mm-hmm.
That is all that I have for you, Kevin, in the this or that or either or category.
All right. Well, then we will go from there into the teams that you should be eyeing. It's obviously easy to get caught up in players because, as we just mentioned with Gayle, there's a move like that, Lukaku moving to United. It's big, it's flashy, it's sexy. But we're going to talk about teams on the whole, and then you can kind of work and cipher your way down from there to narrow your field of vision down to the people that you definitely would want to start the year. For me, teams that I'm looking at to start the season, Arsenal, Leicester, Stoke, and don't know what I wrote here. Is that supposed to be Brighton? I don't know. Bournemouth. Sure. It's supposed to be Bournemouth. Leicester, Stoke, and Bournemouth as three of their first five. The other two are Liverpool and Chelsea, which are no cakewalks. But the Liverpool defense, I'm not profoundly confident in. It helped this profoundly again. If they sign Van Dijk. If it's the same defense as last year, I'm not even a little bit concerned going into that one, especially if they have Alexis. That if they somehow manage to keep Alexis, Alexis Lacazette and Utsal in attack with whichever pace merchant they rotate each week to week on the right side, whether it be Walcott or Oxlade-Chamberlain if he stays, or who was that other one last year? Just entirely forgot his existence. He played on the left a lot
for Arsenal.
Yeah, did Champions League stuff when Alexis was starting up front.
Perez?
No.
Welbeck?
No.
Awobi?
Yeah, Alex Awobi. Yeah, he mattered for 6 weeks last year. That would obviously be a very good start to the year for them. And like I said, Liverpool not too concerning. Manchester City have a pretty good start as well, with Brighton, Bournemouth, and Watford as three of their first five. We just listed the Arsenal attack. Manchester City have, three more players battling for their front four? Yeah. So whoever ends up starting for them is obviously going to be a threat. Here's a frustrating one, because I already mentioned the difference between liking a team and liking the players. Southampton on paper, at attack and defense, both have good starts. We both like the defense. The attack is where there are many, many question marks.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Charlie Austin, I feel like we can trust him a lot more than the great Gabagoo from last year. Yeah, and we talked when they first brought in Pellegrino that it could help Tadic, that it could really, really benefit Sofiane Boufal. This is the start. I mean, I have had a hard time deciding whether or not to put a Southampton player in my team. I have not as of yet. Mm-hmm. But you look at Swansea, West Ham, Huddersfield, Watford, and Palace going both ways. That is one top 10 attack and no top 10 defenses, which is phenomenal. The upside of this is at the end of those 5 weeks, we will know whether or not Southampton will matter this year for fantasy. Because if they can't do it in this stretch, it's not going to happen. But I really, really like those fixtures on both sides. That's why I like Cedric. Other people like Bertrand. If Van Dijk stayed, he'd be huge. Forster is currently my starting keeper in my latest draft of my team right now. So I really like Southampton. And Tottenham, even though the second match is Chelsea, which is of concern, the fact that there's no Hazard definitely benefits Tottenham. Newcastle, Burnley, and Swansea as the other ones, obviously not too concerning. But the Kane thing is, but this is why last week we talked about Dele Alli, and you talked about him again this week, is last year when Kane was out, we learned that Dele Alli can perform without him. And then later on, we found out he could perform even if Kane was having down days, and that is so crucial. So, again, as a team, I think Tottenham is a team you can trust for the first three. Any teams other than those that you're really highlighting to start the season?
You mentioned Southampton. I like Southampton to begin the year. West Brom is an intriguing thing with Bournemouth, Burnley, Stoke, Brighton, West Ham to start the year. That's not too awful.
That makes them really defensively interesting, for sure.
Yeah, and you know Tony Pulis, he likes to sign center backs. He just named, what's his face, the captain today, Johnny Evans.
Oh,
congratulations,
really?
Johnny Evans.
Interesting.
Two other ones that I think are interesting that are going to have nice prices for your team. Look at Newcastle. After their first game against Tottenham, they have Huddersfield, West Ham at home, Swansea away, Stoke at home, Brighton on the road. So that's not too bad for the first six. And then you get into Huddersfield again. If you're not a buyer in Newcastle, you could buy into Huddersfield. They have Palace on the road, Newcastle at home, Southampton at home, West Ham on the road, Leicester at home.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those aren't too bad things. And for prices, everybody's looking for the discounted, you know, fourth or fifth defender that they can squeeze in there that may, you know, actually give them a matchup value. So I think that, you know, I think a Huddersfield and a Newcastle defender as your fourth and fifth defender rotate very nicely with whatever one you want to, you know, roster in there for depending on the game week and the match. But yeah, I mean, you basically want staple items here. You want a Spurs defender. I think you want a Chelsea defender just because at the end of the day, you want a United defender. And then I think you want to mix in with a Southampton, a West Brom, Newcastle, Huddersfield to round out the dollars and make your roster make sense, get it under that 100 mil.
Yep. Definitely agree with a lot of those and really like the Huddersfield shout, as I have recently seeded and put Mooney into my actual team. He replaced Gale, who I talked about taking out earlier.
Me some Mooney.
Yep. Mooney. That's a horrible joke. All right, so for bad matchups, to start off with, you and I have talked in the past about how we're not particularly big Heaton guys this year because it seems like that good keeper from a bad team rotates every year. Very rarely is it the same guy repetitively. They start in their first five. They have Chelsea, Tottenham, and Liverpool, all of whom had top five attacks last year, which makes that very concerning. We've talked Everton to death. Just don't do it. just wait for week six or later and then see what's going on when they face all those B teams you mentioned earlier. Stoke have an equally tough start, although if Arnautovic leaves, is there anybody of interest aside from Butland at Stoke?
Zuma, 5-5.
Oh wait, is that actually happening? I know that.
Well,
was,
I'm saying if it does happen. I mean, he becomes the sexiest player there.
Yeah.
He becomes the sexiest Potter.
Which is not that sexy. And then Leicester, United and Chelsea to start the year is not too fun. And sounds like Yehi Anatu may actually be on the way, which is so strange considering all the forwards they already have. But that's another club. I just kind of want to wait and see how all of that ends up shaking out.
Yeah, for me, it's teams I'm not looking at. Arsenal, I don't trust them for their first six. Leicester, Stoke, Liverpool, Bournemouth, Chelsea. No, thank you. Given those prices, I'd rather just have a Spurs defender or a Chelsea defender and flip-flop if I wanted
defenders
to.
Defenders for sure. How do you feel about the attack, though?
Oh, attack? I mean, you're going to own Arsenal guys regardless. I mean, but you're probably going to own Sanchez and Sanchez only. Maybe a smattering of Ozil. Mm. So, I mean, there's not really – people – Arsenal is one of those teams where it's a big-name team, but for fantasy – how many other options are there besides Sanchez and maybe Lacazette? But I'm not a huge Lacazette believer in the beginning of the season. I think that, you know, I think he's the kind of player that needs time to gel, and then he's going to get goals in lumps.
Yeah.
So that's just me. Let's see. Defensively, with schedules on Bournemouth, they were very leaky at the end of last year. I don't know. They haven't made many changes in defense, so I think that probably continues.
Well, it got Ake.
Yeah, but he was there for most of the year anyway.
No, he wasn't. He was there for half the year, and they were good that half of the year.
All right, he was there for 21 weeks. Okay, so, but they have West Brom, Watford, City, Arsenal, Brighton, Everton in their first six. So yeah. I mean, you're not really heavily investing in Bournemouth. I'm just saying, there's at the given price tag, I'd probably go with a West Brom defender or a Southampton defender, because that's basically what, you know, you're given the choice of Cedric or Charlie Daniels.
Yeah,
you know. Let's see who else. Stoke, definitely an avoid. Three of those first four matchups are blah.com. And Everton, just wait till like Labor Day-ish and then figure out what's what. Or if you hear some comforting Seamus Coleman news, then you can start buying back in.
Yeah. I think that'll probably be the first Everton player I own this year.
Yeah.
Will be Coleman when he comes back. Although, as we've said before, Rooney at 7.5 is low enough to be tempting. Like, yeah. If he actually does stuff.
Yeah, it's funny you said you mentioned something about Southampton. We'll know what Southampton is fantasy wise after the first six games.
Yeah.
I think the same thing is the same thing to be held about Everton, because
just the other way
in their first six,
super deep end.
Yeah, Stoke City, Chelsea, Tottenham, United, and then Bournemouth, who is not I don't think they're a pushover by any stretch. I think that they are probably equally offensively talented as Everton right now.
Yeah, especially depending on how they decide to deploy King and Defoe up front. All right, so that'll do it for the matchup segment for this show. Now we're just going to quickly talk through our current drafts of our teams. Rob, have you made any significant changes to your first draft from last week?
Yeah, I mean, it's just I'm just bouncing around. I've gotten onto the tip of investing in heavy defenders right now, so my defense is kind of loaded, but I really haven't tinkered with it since maybe yesterday. So I have Lindelof, Cedric, Bertrand, Trippier, and Alonso on defense. Tons of money invested.
Cedric and Bertrand, you're going DFS strat there.
Yeah, I love the double Saints. You know, this way maybe I'll get to heaven faster. my goalies are still Hennessy and Foster. I don't think I've changed those. Through the midfield, I have Zaha, Phillips, Ali, Lanzini, and Granit Xhaka still. He's my 5.5 punt. I can go up or down if I wanted to. If I wanted to go to, you know, even though the Ruben Loftus-Cheek news was bad, you can go to 4.5, or you can stay at 5.5. There's tons of guys there that to invest in. And then up front, I just left it what I had because I was tinkering around with a 5-3 or 5-4-1. So I would have Zaha, Phillips, Ali, Lanzini through the midfield, and I would have, you know, Gale, Kane, and King. I was probably going with an Oprah theme there up up top, but I really couldn't pull it off. But yeah, this is just a tinker from when I left it last. There'll be 40 different new ones throughout before August 11th. But
For me, I've made some pretty wholesale changes. The back for the goalkeepers has stayed the same. The defense is somewhat similar. Trippier in for Alderweireld, basically the second Walker went out the door. Still have Cedric in, still have Yedlin in. Did bring in Charlie Daniels, who you just said you hated, but the West Brom stuff is interesting. I'll look more into those matchups. As you said, Angel Rangel is the four-buck chuck of choice for pretty much everyone right now. Now, last week, I basically said you could only really fit two big midfielders in, and I don't know if you remember, I just said I hated all of the 8.0 midfielders and needed to know a lot more. And so then I bumped up to 9.0 and had Coutinho. And I realized, you know, for a whole buck more, do I really believe that much more in Coutinho than the rest of those 8.0 guys? So I decided no. So I bumped who originally started out as Pogba all the way up to a De Bruyne. So now my midfield is Alexis, Dele Alli, Kevin De Bruyne, which is a pretty big heavy-hitting bunch. Then still have Phillips at 6.0, and I have changed Ruben Loftus-Cheek to Tommy Carroll as soon as we heard that news. Sigurdsson not going on their preseason tour could open up the attacking midfield slot for Swansea. And for all their crimes, Creating chances has never been Swansea's issue. They've always played a fairly attractive brand of football, and if Tom Carroll is at the point of that, he could have a really good season, especially at a 4.5 price tag. Up front, obviously, to fit the De Bruyne thing in, had to drop down from Kane down to Gabriel Jesus at 10.5, paired with Roberto Firmino, who stayed in the team, and as I said, dropped down from Dwight Gayle to Stephen Mooney. Wait, I don't think his first name is Stephen at all.
Who, Mooney? Mooney? Yeah. Steve Mooney?
Oh, is it Steve?
Yeah.
Oh, great. I didn't make that up at all. That's terrific. But there's no N. But as you said, even though they're a newly promoted team, Crystal Palace, Newcastle, Southampton, West Ham, Leicester is not the worst run. Southampton is at home, which is fortunate because when Southampton are at St. Mary's, they're obviously a lot tougher defensively. So I think I'm willing to gamble there. I'm probably the shift that's happened is if I kept Gayle in, I would have benched Gayle week one against Tottenham and started whoever ended up in my team between Loftus-Cheek and Tommy Carroll with Mooney, and I think he'd be starting. So I'd start with a 3-4-3 with Trippier, Cedric, and Charlie Daniels starting, Alexis, Ali, De Bruyne, Phillips, and then Jesus, Mooney, and Roberto Firmino. And I think that's how my team would look day one. And it'll be interesting to see how this continues to change. Lots of movement still to come from a lot of teams. There's still a lot of big question marks for big clubs out there. So obviously, keep it tuned here. We'll keep you apprised on all the fantasy comings and goings. In the interim, though, Rob, where can folks find you?
You can find me on Twitter, @Smokey_Loogie, or you can find my writings on Razzball.com.
Yeah, I'm your other host, Kevin DeVries. We've gotten our game and content sides both up over at Goal.com, so be sure to check those out. Also, we are continuing to take in names for our Play Toggle League that we're going to do for this podcast. We've already had, I think, 5 or 6 people submit, so still a couple slots left if you'd like to be involved in that. Also, this will be one of the first 2 episodes of our show that will be going up via Fantrax and Fantrax Radio. So shout out to them as well. And see, this is the part where I've always forgotten something. But, the EPL Roundtable. We'll be back in earnest at the weekend. We'll probably have updates on the championship clubs. We weren't able to record a full show on Sunday. Maybe try to record a full show, but my gut is telling me it's probably going to be just segments for Newcastle, Huddersfield, and Brighton Hove Albion. So be sure to check those out, because if you're listening to the actual Premier League information, you'll also have more background for what's going on in the fantasy world as well. In the interim, keep listening to all our stuff. Again, he's at Smokey_Loogie. I'm at Kevroff. You can reach us, EPLRoundtable@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next week.
Hey.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.